Well, yet another medical examiner's office is announcing major problems with their analysis of DNA evidence in criminal cases. Just over a month ago, we reported on a rogue medical technician in Massachusetts who allegedly tampered with thousands of cases during her tenure at the state crime lab there. Well, this time, the New York City medical examiner has announced that the office is reviewing more than 800 rape kits. These cases were handled by a former lab technician, made a series of incorrect reports over the course of 10 years from 2000 to 2011. Now, the medical examiner has already discovered 26 mishandled rape kits where biological evidence was completely overlooked or contaminated by that lab. Well, joining us is Lawrence Kobolinski, forensic scientist, expert on DNA analysis, and chair of the science department at John Jay College. Also on the line, Aaron Murphy, professor of law at the NYU School of Law. Both of you, welcome to the show. Dr. Kobolinski, let me start with you. These 800 cases, first of all, would you just give us the brief description so that we're all clear on exactly what a rape kit is and why it's important?
Well, yes. When a woman or a man claims a rape, they usually are brought to an emergency room and a kit, which is available to the emergency room physician, is opened up and the victim is sampled. That is, swabs are collected from various orifices. Clothing is taken. It's all put away into that box. It becomes physical evidence that must be analyzed, and the results of that ends up in the courtroom.
So how easy is it for, you know, through incompetence or lack of education or what have you, to contaminate these rape kits in a way that affects, you know, justice, convictions?
Well, contamination can occur in a number of ways. By the analyst, him or herself, contaminating evidence or cross-contaminating evidence from one kit to another. I should say that when we do the analysis, there are multiple individuals involved, and the person who does the initial analysis, that is the identification of the material, is not the same person who does DNA analysis. This is a situation where this individual, this technician, was asked to identify the nature of the substance on clothing and swabs, namely saliva, semen, or blood. And those tests are, they're called colorimetric tests. They're not extremely difficult to do, but you still have to know how to do it. You need the proper training and mindset. But this person did not do DNA analysis, and that should be made clear.
All right. Let me point out that we tried to speak with Ellen Borikov, spokesperson for the New York Medical Examiner's Office. She was not able to come on for an interview, but she did send us some comments by email this morning. Ellen Borikov of the Medical Examiner's Office says one technician was responsible for errors. The technician no longer works at the Medical Examiner's Office. Our quality control uncovered the errors. We promptly reported them to appropriate parties, including the DA's office, defense attorneys, etc. No one was wrongfully convicted. We have improved supervision and training. And that makes me want to turn to you, Aaron Murphy, professor of law at NYU. These types of errors, what do they mean for conviction? Is every single defense attorney in a rape case in New York now going to say to the court, these cases aren't reliable because the labs aren't reliable?
Well, I mean, I think most importantly is to understand the exact scope of the problem and how it came to be and how to correct it in the future. So although it's true that this, you know, this particular analyst may not have worked on the analysis portion, but only on the identification portion, part of the problem here was that when they went to check her work, which was wrong in these very basic, I agree, tests of analysis, it turned out she had also been violating protocol by working on multiple cases at the same time, and she, as a result, had put evidence in the wrong kit. You know, so she would have a piece of evidence that belonged to one case, and it was showing up in another case, and that happened in more, I think, around a dozen cases they noticed initially, and then they're in the course now of reviewing her entire work history. And so, you know, that's where you really could introduce massive problems, because although the analysts down the road may be performing their job competently, if they're testing evidence that in fact belongs to a different case, or if even worse, this person's been working on multiple cases at the same time, and so she's contaminating cases across cases. That analyst down the road is never going to know that. They're just going to find a sample, test it, say it belongs in that case, and, you know, express a profile. And those kinds of mistakes can be very hard to catch. I mean, I'll give you just one example. They noticed that in one of the cases, you know, in some of the cases that they went back and tested that did in fact have biological evidence, they were able to get profiles, and they were able to match those profiles against our national database. One of them hit to a consensual sexual partner, meaning someone who had intercourse with the victim, but consensually, separate from the alleged sexual assault. Well, what if in the process of working on that case, this analyst is also working on another case file, has the case file open, and inadvertently transfers either samples or pieces of evidence or even just some DNA material, which of course can be just a few cells of material, especially given some of the methods used by OCME, you know, transfers that into a separate case, and that consensual sexual partner now is turning up in a totally unrelated rape kit for someone he doesn't mm-hmm. know and someone who's completely uninvolved, with him intimately, and being identified as a possible perpetrator. How is that person potentially going to say, look, this has nothing to do with me, and, you know, try to explain, especially if they're not even aware that sure. they ever came up in their own partner's kit?
Well, Aaron Murphy, the statement from the medical examiner's office said nobody was wrongfully convicted, but it does not say the converse. It does not say nobody who was guilty got off because of contamination.
Well, I think that's because they can't say that. We do know, at least it seems as though there were at least three hits to convicted offenders, which does indicate that there were initially, because of this technician's work, some missed cases or cases in which they could have identified a possible perpetrator but failed to. It's also important just to notice that this is all policing that's being done internally. These are not externally policed, actions. And I think that's a real problem. I think that's why we keep seeing across the country every lab involved in some version of a scandal or another, because there is not the level of external policing of work that you would like to see.
Lawrence Kobylinski, quickly, Aaron's right. There have been lots of complaints about lots of forensic departments around the country. Are we on the road to improvement here?
No, I think you will see the same problems in clinical laboratories not doing forensic work. I think that this is an accredited lab. It's the biggest lab in the United States. They have transparency. They have good quality control and quality assurance. I've worked with this lab since the beginning of forensic biology, and I think they've done a fairly good job. These things will happen.
Okay.
Good training is very important.
I think we have an ongoing story here. That's the takeaway. Lawrence Kobylinski, forensic scientist, professor at John Jay. Aaron Murphy, professor of law at NYU Law School. Thank you both.